I think if you look in his attic, if you went up there and did some real investigating, you would find a portrait of Derrick Rose, and his knees are just super healthy, and he's getting stronger all the time, and he plays in that painting in every single season.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Hey, 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 sports nerds, welcome to another exciting edition of Inside the Locker right here on oneofus.net. This is, of course, the weekly nerdy sportscast that knows the difference between Darth Vader, Darth Maul, and Tim Donaghy. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury. I'm joined, of course, by Mr. JC DeLeon.
What up?
Mr. Elliot Fontanette.
What am I, a farmer?
It's after six. What am I, a farmer? And then, of course, Adam Pepites de Carne, Charles.
I thought we
were going to start cycling through the meat.
Well, you know what?
I'm pretty sure beef nuggets is non-translatable from most languages.
Okay. My Rosetta Stone specific to the words beef nuggets has not come in yet, so I'm slowly working on that. We will get more. We'll bring you more as that develops. In the meantime, I want to let you know that Inside the Locker is available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at ITLcast, and you can like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And I want to remind you to become a subscriber if you haven't done so already. Right now, we have two exclusive podcasts for subscribers. One is The Breakfast Pub, which is our weekly roundup of all the movie headlines and all of the trailers. That's for everybody. And then, of course, we have The Original Gentleman that is available for $5 level or brown coat level subscribers and above. And we'll be dropping more and more and more exclusive content in for all the levels as we go on. So please consider doing that. That's how we keep the lights on here.
And since you're charging now, would you consider that a gentleman's club?
It is a gentleman's club. It is the original gentleman's club.
It's the cover charge.
And it has exactly as much nudity as... No, it doesn't at all. I can't...
It has exactly as much nudity that you want to see if you listen to her during the day.
Exactly as much nudity as if you're standing outside the gentleman's club and just listening to...
And that's just Bo.
I'm like, Bo, what are you doing with your throat? Like, he's got like some kind of... Like he's a frog, like an Amazon tree frog that can just inflate his neck.
Yeah, I just feel like before he got back on the breakfast, Original Gentleman, he probably just sat on his roof and being like, hey, this is what I think of things.
He's sitting there with a glass of scotch like, you will listen to me. I am Bo.
And another thing.
And another. Well, today, this is a very exciting show because we are going to wrap up what I've decided to call this episode. This is Final Fantasy time. This is Final Fantasy 2015. It's the final fantasy. Because we will be doing the trivia finals to determine the winner of our Inside the Locker Fantasy Football Challenge. Yeah, I know February is almost over and we're just now doing this. Bite me. But before we get into that, hold the goddamn phone. It's sports news.
Flash, the captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
There's not a lot to cover this week, but I thought we'd run down the big headlines. The first of which, of course, is that Derrick Rose is Mr. Glass once again. It's his knee again, right?
It's going to be an interesting development because with his knee injury last year, they did anticipate a setback like this. But he had gone far enough into the season, they thought maybe it wouldn't happen. Because of the type of setback that is, specifically, it's a torn meniscus. It could be anywhere from 6 weeks, depending on the severity of it. And it also does kind of depend on Derek. Like, if he's willing to come back after 6 weeks, he probably can, based on his history and how cautiously he approaches these injuries. He's probably just going to sit out the year.
Here's what I'm going to relate this to, and I think this is apropos considering Dan Aykroyd is from Chicago. You know how Dan Aykroyd keeps saying, like, there's going to be a Ghostbusters 3, there's going to be a Ghostbusters 3 once we have everybody on board. The problem is nobody else is on board. Is it time to cut bait on the reality where Derrick Rose plays all season long for the Bulls and helps them and Ghostbusters 3 exists, or is this another game of wait and see for the Bulls?
I thought you were going to say, is this going to be a situation where Derrick Rose stops existing and then a female comes in to take over the role of Derrick Rose?
Right, no, exactly.
See, I was going to jump off of that and say no, because Dan Aykroyd's so crazy that he has said in interviews, well, that once they get this reboot out there, we can then just go and do the continuation. Because people be aware of the brand. That's why I'm supporting it.
It's like, the problem was never that people didn't remember the brand. That's like, I ain't afraid of no ghosts, and I ain't afraid of the brand recognition falling off, okay?
Right.
That was never... The issue was always that Bill Murray didn't want to do it, and then Harold Ramis died, And it became Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson need work. Yeah. That's what it became. And that's the bigger issue.
Ernie Hudson's doing fine doing the Comic-Con circuit. Yeah. Asking people to pay for autographs.
Yeah, I feel like I've just recently seen Ernie Hudson in something. I don't remember what it was.
Was that
like,
Oz?
I watched Congo recently.
Those things exist. Yeah.
Those things do exist. Absolutely. But no, seriously, for Chicago, is it time to look at him more as a trade commodity as opposed to a commodity that they need to nurse back to health and get back in the game?
I mean, trading him is tricky. He's got 2 years left on his contract. They still owe him $40 million.
Jesus.
I can't imagine any teams willing to pay that forty million over the next 2 years.
I would think without some semblance of guarantee that he's actually healthy.
Because
he is still Derrick Rose to some degree. So
right before he had gone most of the season, kind of cautiously, clearly wasn't the guy he used to be. But in the last couple of weeks, right before the All-Star break, he had shown that he was the guy he used to be. Killed the Cavs in one game.
That's true.
I don't know. I'm sensing a Lakers uniform in his future.
You think?
Like, that's where if you're a little bit, you're just not quite right, but you used to be really great, you get the Steve Nash treatment.
Well, yeah, and the other...
Just go after the Lakers, you'll make a bunch of money, and then you won't be effective.
Well, I think the other element about this is also what's going on with Rajon Rondo in Dallas, mm-hmm. where I think there's speculation now that he's actually going to be... he wants to go play for LA. Like, he definitely does. Or I think he definitely doesn't want to stay there in Dallas.
Well, yeah. If the confrontation with Rick Carlisle and now the subsequent suspension is any indication,
right?
Yeah, you know, Rondo is not going to be a good fit in Dallas for very long. But actually, that kind of segues into, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Lakers won a game. I know.
Oh yeah.
Put it on the fucking calendar, right? Actually, that's not facetious. You probably should. They don't win many games anymore. But after the game, during the post-game interview, Swaggy P, who not only has the dumbest nickname in the NBA, but maybe the single stupidest person in the NBA.
Well, his name is
Gazelle, so yeah. He led a celebration where it was just like, woo, we won, everybody want to count us out, but we're back, woo. Just my man, Jay Lynn, and Carlos Boozer leans in. It's like it's like watching a frat party on national TV. And was it Jimmy Kimmel? I think it was
yeah, Kobe Bryant was on Jimmy Kimmel.
And Jimmy Kimmel's like, I got to show you this video of your teammates celebrating. And Kobe's reaction was fucking priceless. It was just this look of like, are these really the idiots that comprise my team? Is that really who I play with?
Is that really the bed I made myself to sleep in?
I think in that moment he decided to retire. Like, I was really expecting the next day for him to be like, yeah, I'm done. This is over.
The thing that's weird about the Lakers, it's like, Justin Lin, he's not an amazing player, but he's serviceable. Carlos Boozer, he's decent. Swaggy P's a dumbass, but you could get some effective minutes out of him.
Yeah.
I don't see why they're so bad.
Yeah, they shouldn't be.
I think it probably has a little bit to do with Kobe Bryant's $22 million contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so if Kobe Bryant over here is mad about that, he's going to find himself a fucking mirror.
It's like, this is what you afforded, pal.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I can tell you for a fact they are not well coached. I have seen it in action. They are not. Byron Scott is a do-nothing coach.
Yeah.
He sits on the bench. He doesn't say anything. You know, and talk about not even, forget managing the game. He literally did not stand up for a solid hour.
Yeah.
While in that game that I was at against the Pacers, where the Pacers beat up on him. And I was like, you're really not trying? You have all of this talent that you went out and bought, including Byron Scott, as your coach, and nobody's trying. I don't understand it.
He's got the luxury of like starting his career out with talented players, which is probably why people think he's such a great coach. The Lakers are bad.
Yes. So bad.
I think
it's the same song we've been singing all
year. I think one of the things that's the major thing that's going to come out of LeBron's legacy by the time he retires is going to be the number of coaches who he helped actually continue careers.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, it's because he started his career. That's the, because Byron Scott was the first coach in Cleveland. Am I wrong?
No, it was Paul Silas, and then it was Mike Brown.
Mike Brown, yeah, that's who I'm thinking of. Brown. We can just cut this shit out. So anyway.
Nope.
You can't have an Elliot Mulligan.
It's too funny. I can't cut that out when you say it like that. If you want it cut out, don't be funny about it, because then I have to leave it in. That's the rule. But moving to the world of the NFL, turns out Roger Goodell still messing up. Still really? Not doing his job correctly. And now a federal judge has ruled in favor of Adrian Peterson over the NFL, so that his basically now I think the next step is that his appeal goes back to arbitration within the NFL, but he's one step closer to being reinstated.
Yeah, and it's such a weird way in which Roger Goodell has mangled every situation the NFL has been in, because, and specifically with this Adrian Peterson thing, because on the one hand, the NFL appealing a rule that a judge gave is kind of like, well, who the fuck are you, NFL? Like, on that hand, I'm on Adrian's side.
Mm-hmm.
But then Adrian Peterson is mad at the Vikings because they didn't stand by him throughout his whole ordeal. And I'm like, well, who would have stood by you?
What,
like,
team would stand by you? Yeah, exactly.
You don't get to play that card. And so with this one situation, Roger Goodell on one hand has me on Adrian's side, and then on the other hand, who the fuck is Adrian Peterson?
That's the thing. It's like you take your feelings about...
Who do I like in this situation?
Right, exactly. Right. Take everything you feel about Adrian Peterson and what he did out of the equation. You have to look at the fact that Roger Goodell's mishandling of this has once again created a loophole where somebody who did something heinous is now able to come back and work and be an NFL player again because of how poorly Roger Goodell handled it in the first place.
Here's the thing. First thing, I say pox on both their houses. Number two,
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But number two is that it's definitely a fuck-up by Goodell, but it's a fuck-up by design. Like, when they negotiated this policy before all this bullshit happened this last year, they knew that this would happen. Like, they knew they didn't want effective penalties. So that when it gets to the point where there's not a set penalty and he just fucks up, which he did, that was negotiated by the players' union. It was negotiated by the NFL, like, and the sponsors. Everybody knew. They're just acting like they didn't know. Now, whenever you don't make a rule for something that's going to happen, you're making a rule in effect. They wanted this to happen. This is what's supposed to happen.
Well, the thing is, the owners have been at odds with the Players Association since it was created, and Goodell has been an owner's bitch of a commissioner so far. So I can't help but wonder how long the owners are going to go, you know, do we really have to keep putting up with this guy, like, screwing us? Like, even though he's kissing our ass, he's also screwing us over at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, how long until they just get a more effective puppet, question.
I would answer that and say, when the NFL loses enough profit, like, the NFL is going to be profitable. It's the most popular sport in the nation.
Yeah.
That's a non-starter. Right. It depends if they start sliding.
Okay. True, but do you remember how many sponsorships they started losing after the Ray Rice thing?
But did they keep losing them is the question.
Like, I don't know.
Well,
but
that's the thing is the NFL didn't necessarily lose a whole lot. I think the teams themselves did. So,
well, I know Budweiser was threatening to pull out as an official sponsor of the NFL because of Ray Rice. And again, Roger Goodell handled that in such a way that created he basically double jeopardied Ray Rice.
Yeah.
He's like, you get a 2-game suspension for that offense. Never mind, you're banned forever. It's like, why are you trying me twice for the same crime?
I agree that he is a fuck-up and he fucked up. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is the NFL's making so much money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got somebody who's so firmly in your pocket that you basically just run the guy, and so you don't really have any rules, they're going to keep him because one of the things I've really started to notice more and more, like, as I spend more time on the internet, just, like, on this end of it. Like, before I started doing podcasts, I really didn't see this side of it where there's always an outrage every week.
Yeah.
Something has the internet pissed off.
Right.
And if you just wait, if you just do something to respond and you just wait about 2 weeks, people move on. Like, there's really, these local sponsors that drop the Vikings or something, they got somebody else. They got more money.
Yeah. Eventually. Like, eventually. I mean, it all worked for the most part. Nothing has ever been so heinous that it hasn't just worked out for the team eventually anyway.
Yeah. Like, Roger Goodell's got this interesting move where as soon as he's really heavy under public scrutiny, he's like, more playoff games?
Yeah. It's like, look over here.
Playoff games?
Look over here. Jingle keys.
Yeah, but let me be clear, Brian. I mean, if it was up to me, that guy'd be out on his fucking ass.
I don't understand why he isn't. Like, and I've looked at this from all sides, and I still just think he's hurting everyone.
Yeah,
no matter in whose pocket he is, he's hurting everyone, and I don't understand why they keep letting him slide.
Yeah, and I think even though the NFL is incredibly profitable, I think the NFL could take a lesson from the NBA. The NBA's players union is really powerful. Adam Silver is really kind of a people's commissioner. He's come out from the gate saying, you guys like gambling? I'm going to work to try to legalize gambling. Players have all the power. Like, it's becoming more and more popular, and he's doing all the right moves, and he's doing it in the interest, really, of everybody. Like, not just the owners.
Hmm. Well, speaking of outrage and things that really set us off and things that, you know, are really just contentious and a subject of so much acrimony, let's talk about Llamagate 2015.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Oscars.
No, no, no. Llamagate 2015 is obviously...
Oh, that didn't make me mad. That made me so happy.
You're absolutely right. I can't even pretend to be mad about... Okay, so if you guys didn't... This was covered on ESPN.
Yep.
Today. Yeah, so apparently...
I was wondering exactly why it was we were talking about this.
In Arizona, at a retirement community, somebody left the gate open, and was it four or five?
It was only two.
It was two?
Yeah,
really?
It was two.
Okay, so it was two llamas escaped and led police on a very low-speed chase. Now, you may be wondering to yourself, what the hell were llamas doing in a retirement community in Arizona in the first place? That question has yet to be answered. But what happened is you had a whole community trying their darndest to do something they'd never been asked to do in their entire lives, and that is wrangle llamas. And
took 18 minutes and 49 seconds.
They couldn't do it. Like every time they thought they had them cornered, you know, they would dart off to the left or right. It's like watching a bad defense trying to wrangle Barry Sanders.
Yeah,
because
there's one gif where one guy has like his hands kind of around the neck of one of the llamas, and the llama like jukes out and just like runs the other way.
I'm referring to that llama as Lorenzo Llama. Yeah, that's right. Right, he's a renegade. Exactly, that's exactly why. So the question, of course, is: was this an accident, or is this forward thinking viral marketing for the next Emperor's New Groove film?
Llama face.
It's hard to say at this point, but what was funny is Herm Edwards on ESPN actually breaking down the deficits of the people who were trying to wrangle them, and like they had their little like. Their highlighter thing, so like they would freeze a frame and then like highlight the leg muscle of the llama, yeah. And then they would show like a blue, like, here's all this open space, and llamas, as we know, have very strong. I'm like, what the hell is happening?
Because you know what's interesting about today's a Thursday, even during the NFL season, Thursday, not a lot of news.
No.
On Thursdays, in general.
And so, yeah, they wait till Friday, which is why we really should stop recording this on Thursday.
And so this is a period of time. March Madness is a couple weeks away. The NBA playoffs is about 4 or 5, I think 6 weeks away. The NFL draft is way away. Like, there's nothing happening.
It's in a
danger.
There's nothing happening right now except Kentucky is continuing to win all their games of college basketball.
We're in the dead zone. Nothing happening.
I think
Llamagate.
This Llamagate was a godsend.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? It couldn't have been any better if they had gotten the ghost of David Attenborough. Just be like, these llamas have decided to kick the shit out of this Arizona community. They've now been signed by two completely different NFL franchises.
And what's great about this is, as the internet is wont to do, there are tons of videos on this where the whole thing is remixed with, like, Chariots of Fire, or Yakety Sax, or... It took, like, hours for that to happen. Like, the internet is amazing.
Well, it's like you got a bunch of people who, like...
I was at work, and I was watching
fucking
this.
Memes. How do they work?
Well, it's like you got a bunch of college students who have nothing to do.
And a lot of weed.
A lot of weed, and, like, amazing video editing software that is the equivalent of an entire video editing suite from 20 years ago.
Right.
It happened right as I had like 30 minutes left in my workday, and I was like, well, this is how I'm going to end my day.
This is clearly the most important thing I'm going to do today.
That happened to me because like Brian sent out a text like, you got to watch this because we're going to talk about it. And that was great because like, at that point, like around the end of the week on Thursday and Friday, my brain starts shutting off earlier in the week, in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, my brain just like, it, like puts on its hat, grabs a suitcase, and is like, well, I'm out the door. If you want to stay here, that's fine. I'm going home. So that was perfect. I just watched
I like that you take a suitcase to work. Like you live at work.
Like, yeah. Oh,
briefcase.
That's awful. I take all my toiletries to work, brush my teeth, I change into PJs at lunch.
No, that's how horrible work has been. Thinking,
I just like, imagine I you coming in like Mr. Rogers, like taking your shoes out, like, it's such a great feeling to be a lawyer, such a great feeling to sue your pants off, and then you actually take your pants off, and then you change into pajama pants.
That'd be nice.
Right? I know, I'm just saying. I'm not trying to tell you how to live, just putting ideas
in
your head.
I do need to buy a sweater.
Just putting ideas in your head.
Cardigan.
And before we wrap up the news, I guess we got to talk about the Oscar winners and the Oscar losers,
of
course.
Fuck you, Brian! How dare you talk about the Oscar winner?
Okay, this is the thing that caused actual outrage, as it always does. Year after year after year, the Monday following the Oscars is full of, like, half-baked philosophical nonsense about, oh, the Academy's too this, or it's not enough that. The Academy is what it's always been, guys. It hasn't changed. It's a big money pageant that has really, you know, it has about as much relevance as, you know, whatever the highest grossing film of the first week of March is in 2008. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And historically, the Oscars have been really, really wrong about what the best films of those years are. So frankly, I don't understand the outrage that comes up. I always look at the trends that I see being upheld and the trends that I see being broken.
That's a good way to look at it.
And frankly, this Oscars, a couple of things did surprise me. Now, I was convinced, and I think a lot of us were at this table, that Boyhood was the Oscar darling.
Oh, absolutely.
And not only did it not win Best Director, the award I thought it was best suited for, but it got beaten in Best Picture by Birdman, mm-hmm. which is a very reflective film, a film that is very meta, it is very sort of almost blockbuster self-deprecating.
That's the perfect term. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what the Academy ended up liking about it, and that's why it ended up winning, but I was really surprised that Iñárritu won for Best Director for Birdman, and that Birdman won for Best Picture.
And then now, Michael Keaton had to put his acceptance fees back in his pocket.
Yeah.
The saddest shit I've seen in like a month.
Eddie Redmayne, like, I'm not taking anything away from the kid.
I will Jupiter Ascending. You can take all that shit away.
I did want him to go up and give a speech like, I am very thankful to the Academy
for this award!
Because that's exactly how he talks to Jupiter Ascending. But then again, you know, what's her name? White Lady Saved the Day from Blindside.
Bullock.
Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock won a Best Actress the same week she won a Razzie. So, I mean, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
Shit happens. I was a little surprised that Eddie Redmayne, with his youth, was able to take Best Actor, because youth is not usually something in acting. Now, in supporting, the Academy historically will give awards to younger performers. You look at people like
Cuba Gooding Jr.
I'm talking about like Tatum O'Neal for Paper Moon, what's her name?
Anna Paquin.
Anna Paquin. Yeah,
For the piano.
Was that actress or supporting actress? That was supporting actress. Yeah, right. See, that's
how old was she?
She was 9 or 10, something like that.
Jesus.
In the piano. Yeah.
So the supporting categories are usually where they err more on the side of youth. So I was surprised that Redmayne took it just because of his youth.
Or his method,
yeah. But as far as best supporting actor, that was J.K. Simmons' award. They're already etching his name on that Oscar by the time the Golden Globes.
Whiplash. All I've seen are the trailers.
It's really good,
and that's
dude.
His fucking award.
It's really, really good.
An early Ermy performance from like Full Metal Jacket, with like some tears. Like I would say if you can imagine at some point Arlie Ermey actually breaking down into tears at one point in Full Metal Jacket, that's pretty much what J.K. Simmons does over the course of like 90 minutes.
Yeah, and you've mentioned Oz, so you've seen Oz?
A little bit.
Basically Schillinger in the movie.
Okay.
And I will say, I think James Gunn, you know, the Oscars had this weird, pointed, anti-populist message.
Yeah, a little bit.
Jack Black gets up and it's like, everything's about superheroes, I take walls, and I'm like, if there weren't for shit like that, you would not have a career.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jack Black, the voice of Kung Fu Panda.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Like, fuck you, you made a career. Like, you, one of your biggest songs was fucking called Wonder Boy.
Sit down, afterthought. but what I find really irritating about that, and why I gotta give a big pat on the back to James Gunn, is that, you know, movies, by their nature, you know, as Roger Ebert taught us, are populist. That's what they are. Nobody makes a movie to be seen by three people.
Yeah.
Nobody makes a movie to be seen only by the members of the Academy voting board. They're made for the people. So what is the difference between an independent film with a lot of, you know, artistic credibility and a lot of prestige and something like Guardians of the Galaxy as far as what they're trying to achieve? They're just trying to be seen by as many people as possible. And if people like them, and if people worked, and, you know, this is what James Gunn said. James Gunn is like, if you think that, you know, you put more love and more passion into your independent film than I put into Guardians of the Galaxy, you're just plain wrong.
Yeah.
Because I love these characters, I loved this project, and it's like, that's the only thing that matters to me.
Yeah.
No matter what kind of movie you're making.
The only difference is money. Like, it's the financial aspect of, like, for some reason, when people see that something looks expensive, that means it's, like, that there's no heart into it.
I feel like Guardians of the Galaxy gets tarnished because it is making money and it is sci-fi's genre.
Mm-hmm.
It gets tarnished by, like, I love these movies, but they're not the same love doesn't go into making the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right, and those, and that's the thing.
Yeah,
when there's no
hit with all that brush.
There are movies that are made just to make money and just for just for the hollow intention of cashing in. And you can see that, and even people like us, even the geeks reject that shit.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's what happens. And you know, and I find it very untoward of the Academy to take aim, and it's like, you know what? We already know you hate popular things because Julianne Moore won for a movie for Best Actress that no one saw.
I haven't even heard of the movie. I want to see it.
It hasn't even been released yet. It's like, it's a hell of a performance. If you guys haven't watched
it. And I get that, but it's like, you, Oscars, you don't have to tell us you hate popular things. You've been telling us that for years the movies that you choose as Best Picture.
We already see your hipster glasses. We're good.
Exactly. Like, you don't need to make that statement. I mean, as far as the other awards, I feel like I'm monopolizing the conversation here. Was there any other surprises, you guys? As far as who won and who lost?
I mean, the biggest one probably was Birdman. Like, Birdman winning as much as it did. I knew Emmanuel Lubezki was going to win cinematographer 2 years in a row. Like, you don't have, like, a seamless blend of, like, scene after scene.
Oh, that was amazing.
Like, the amount of orchestration that was involved, which is probably the reason why Iñárritu won for director as well. But
yeah,
a lot of that stuff doesn't happen even without Lubezki. Like, if you don't have Lubezki behind the camera, you can't make that movie.
That's
you
true.
Know?
That's true.
It's same, like, you can't, like, Children of Men doesn't exist without Lubezki. Gravity doesn't exist without Lubezki. Like, those movies don't exist.
Those are all the same guy?
Those are all the same cinematographers.
Jesus Christ, wow.
Yeah, so no, yeah. Those movies can't happen.
His filmography. It's
like, it's
amazing.
A who's who of, like, greatest of, like, best Mexican films of, like, the past 10 years kind of thing.
He did Tree of Life.
I hate that movie, but I respect the cinematography.
Yeah.
The one award at the Oscars that kind of bunks the whole theory about them hating everything popular is that Big Hero 6 won Best Animated Film.
You beat me to it. That's true. That's my problem with anime, they shouldn't even award animation, because all it's turned into is, what movie did Pixar or Disney make that year?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying, Tales of Princess Kaguya, I like that movie, but it has huge problems because the end comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They just, they go for about an hour telling their little stories, like their little sub-stories, and then they go, we need to have an ending. Let's just have the ending, and you have no clue where it came from. Like, and I get that, but Big Hero 6 was mediocre.
Big Hero 6 is a good movie.
I like Big Hero 6.
It's mediocre for Pixar, is what I'm saying.
It's a good movie.
But it's not Pixar.
It's Disney.
It's gotten
so incestuous between those two companies, it's hard to tell anymore. But I will say this. It's not a bad movie, but amongst the other nominees, it's just the most ordinary movie.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, I think that's the big... And the fact that Box Trolls, which, of all the movies nominated, was the most innovative, was the most unique, was the most, in my opinion, deserving, if you're talking about pure animation of that award, you know, and it gets snubbed.
And it brings up a good point, because, like, the stop-motion animation never won that category.
And, like, that's really fucking hard to do. Like,
so hard.
One of my favorite music videos is by... I forgot the name of the artist, but...
Tool.
Not Tool.
They used to do all those...
No,
Alice in Chains used to do the stop-motion ones, yeah.
No, there's one, it's like, it's a stop-motion music video, and it's like this anime, it's really sweet, it's off of this Keane song, I forgot the name, I'll figure it out, I'll put in the notes.
Okay.
But it's just glorious to
watch. Green Jelly's Three Little Pigs.
No.
Oh.
Just like throwing out guesses. We're not
out. It's like by a female vocalist, and it's a really sweet song, and it's about these bears and these animals in a wood, but it's all with paper craft.
Yeah.
It's like, my point is like... The thing about film and the thing about the Oscars, the only thing that makes me still think it has some legitimacy is that critics... This is the thing I get pissed off when people talk bad about critics. What people don't understand about critics is they only criticize so much because they love the art form so much.
Yeah.
Like, Brian loves the shit out of movies.
I do.
So my point would be, if you're going to have an animation award, limit that voting to people who love animation.
Well, so here's the deal. Here's the thing with that. The one thing that I think does give credence to the Academy Awards. Now, the people who are voting, you may have reservations about the people who are actually doing the voting, but it is voted upon by your peers. Like, directors vote for directors, actors vote for actors, actresses, you know, so on and so forth. So all those who ends up winning was determined by people who do the same job you do.
But animation was different.
And now, I don't know if all the categories work that way.
I know cinematography is, which is kind of why it's interesting that people complain about Deacons having never won.
But his
voted on by
his peers. Yeah, right. It's other cinematographers who voted on director photography.
But everyone across all the categories are notorious for not watching all the films that are nominated.
That's
either,
true.
Which is a big, big problem.
Well, and then there's also the thing with, I think, Selma being, you know, the reason
consciously snubbed.
Well, yes, it was maybe consciously snubbed, but it was also, I think there was something wrong with them actually not having handed out screeners, or it hadn't gone out, or screeners hadn't gone out in time.
Yeah.
So people weren't given the opportunity to actually see the movie. Yeah. So it gives the impression that maybe it was snubbed and they have some kind of vendetta against a movie like Selma, when it could be something as simple as, no, we just honestly didn't get the opportunity to see the movie.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And credit where credit is due for the Academy. When they did their performance of Everything is Awesome, I was so happy. I was just so energetic and I was dancing in my seat. I was like, yes, it's the best song of the year. And then the song from Selma played, and I was instantly transported back to that press screening, and I remembered the moment I started crying during that movie was as soon as the credits started rolling and that song started playing. I was like, and you've listened to the Oscar cast, which hopefully will be in the subscriber forums by the time this goes up, you'll hear me say, yep, that's the best song. Like, I completely surrendered. That song absolutely should win, and it did.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem with the Oscars. It's like, it's gotten so predictable. Like, I knew that someone wasn't going to win any of the Film Awards. It was going to win the music one, because that was the last one performing. It was going to... Grand Budapest, it surprised me, but it didn't. They're not going to have
the awards that it won. It didn't surprise me at
all. Yeah, it's like, it's going to win all the technical stuff, all the stuff.
Costumes and makeup, like, and whatnot.
To get in the consolation, you're going to have artsy for the supporting roles. You're going to have it's so formulaic now. There's no surprises. It's just like, okay, these are going
to
win. This is going
to win. To a degree, actually, I mean, this is the year where I was surprised a lot. Like, well, and I was the one I was most shocked about was Richard Linklater. Like, I couldn't even fathom the fact that he wouldn't win for director. But
because again, no matter how you feel about the movie, the undertaking at the director position on the movie.
Yeah, like the endurance is of the entire thing. Like the idea, I don't even know how you come up with the idea of, or how you even pitch that to other people to try to come in on your project with you. It's like, look guys, this is a marathon. You know, I'm going to film some, like, you know what? Have you seen Synecdoche, New York? It's like, we're going to make that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to film you. You know, days here, you know, in between, like, short little times throughout the year, short little sprints, if you will, but we're going to do this over the course of, like, nine years, 12 years. I don't know. I haven't really decided that part yet. I'll think about that, you know, in 6 years.
Right. Exactly. But
like, and then how you, and actually, you know what? I was even surprised it didn't win for editing. How do you even,
how does it not win for editing?
Yeah. That one really surprised me.
I mean, you're taking, years worth of footage that you have. And trying to make it into a cohesive story.
Whiplash.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Which is very fast paced. You know, I kind of get like, it's very, I don't know, jazz like in that sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, those are things that were baffling to me. And those were shocking to me. Like, I really thought that those were shoo-ins.
Yeah. And I think the biggest surprise of all that we can agree on is Neil Patrick Harris, who is funny and has hosted things well in the past, seemed like he had never been on stage or told a joke before.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on with him?
Well, I think what happened is he told a joke at the beginning, and I don't know, I'm just making this up in my head. Like, this is my own headcanon. And he told a joke in the beginning that was taking down how white the Oscars were. And I'm just thinking maybe he got told something, because he was funny in that first bit. And then everything after that was just sort of...
Maybe they restrained him a little bit.
Maybe they were like, what the fuck are you doing? This is not a Ricky Gervais situation. You still need to fucking work.
Well...
You
know,
I was watching TCM had made a documentary called "And the Oscar Goes to," I think, sometime last year. It was a pretty good documentary,
actually on Netflix right now.
It is. That's the reason why I watched it, because it was free.
There you go.
And I was bored. but Billy Crystal made one of the more insightful comments in the documentary, because, you know, he's hosted many
times,
and it's like you have to have a sort of skill level or talent level where you can not only, I guess, think comedically, but think comedically so quickly on your feet because you're dealing with live television. So like in like moments that are spontaneous, you've got to be on your game in order to, like, the first idea in your head at any given moment is, how do I turn this into a joke? How do I turn this into a joke? How do I turn this into a joke? And that's constantly what's going through your mind is, so that whenever something spontaneous happens where you feel like you can actually add some kind of comical insight, the moment's there for you, and you've only got a matter of like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
In which it's gonna make or break whether or not you actually are considered a good host.
True.
You know, it's not necessarily about the written jokes so much as it is about the filler in between stuff that looks like you have just kind of made it up on the fly.
And that's what's so baffling is because he's hosted the Tonys. Like, he's literally hosted the award show for live theater. So, I mean, talk about thinking on your feet while you're giving out awards to people who can think on their feet. Like, it's just,
right.
It's just, I thought it was baffling. And unfortunately, whenever the host is, you know, whenever the host is stale, whenever the jokes fall flat, I mean, you have kind of a mediocre evening. And I think that's ultimately what we ended up with. For a few surprises.
It was a very safe choice.
Very safe choice.
Chris Rock host the Oscars. At least they were swinging for the fences.
And remember when Sean Penn got up in Chris Rock's face? Because Chris Rock was like, no one knows who Adrian Brody is. And he's like, let me tell you who Adrian Brody is. And then in this, I want to point this out. Sean Penn, when he announced that Inarritu had won for director, was like, who gave this guy a green card? I'm like, oh, so you get to make jokes.
Like, and Sean Penn, don't talk too fucking loud, because there still was that time you tied up Madonna and beat the shit out of her.
I had to watch Team America World Police right after that joke, right after Sean Penn made that joke. So I watched Team America World Police just to watch him get eaten by a panther.
Good. It's like, it's so fucking sanctimonious, but you beat your girlfriend
pretty goddamn bad. He's a fucking Looney Tune. I think we can all agree on that. Well, that's going to do it for the news. And now, oh my gosh, guys, bring it on down, because we're about to move into Final Fantasy 2015. It's the Final Fantasy. It's here. After weeks of grueling combat, a field of bloodthirsty competitors has been narrowed down to just four. Now, like Olympic champions representing their respective league, these fantasy football titans have gathered for one final showdown. Stepping into a film and sports trivia Thunderdome, these last men standing are about to face the wrath of JC's mighty intellect. They've proven their brawn, but whose brain will prevail? The lights are lit, the fanfare played, and now it's time to settle for good and all who reigns supreme over the landscape of Inside the Locker's Fantasy Football League. Geeks, take up arms and prepare for the endgame. This is your time. This is your destiny. This is Final Fantasy 2015. Koopla! Koopla! The way this is going to work is we're going to ask you a series of questions about sports and about movies as well. And you're just going to answer as many of them as you can. There's no time limit. It's just, you know, seeing how many you can get right. And then we will use that to determine the ultimate winner.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'll try. I'm so tired.
What is Charles Barkley's nickname?
The round mouth of rebound.
The round mouth of... I don't remember.
That's right.
Oh, count it.
Yeah, round mound.
Count it.
Yeah. Round mound.
Shit. I don't know that one.
All right. You could have gone with either the round mound of rebound or Sir Charles.
Although I do like that round mound is the actual nickname, and he just said shit. Yeah. I think those are pretty synonymous.
I have no idea, so I'm just going to go with Chubbs.
What company makes the official NBA basketball?
Spalding.
Correct.
Spalding.
Correct.
For some reason, all I can think of is video game companies. That is not true at all. I'm just going to say Nike.
No, unfortunately, it's Spalding.
I like how you thought NBA Jam might have been the company that made the official NBA basketballs, though.
What NFL team plays at Lambeau Field?
That would be the Green Bay Packers.
Correct.
All right.
Packers.
Correct.
Green Bay.
Green Bay. There you go.
I know nothing about the NFL.
And yet you win fantasy football.
It's just like, let me take some salt. Just rub that right in.
That's the way it works.
Where did Johnny Manziel play college football?
At Texas. The Longhorns.
Oh, Texas A&M.
Close. Very close.
Yeah.
You guys got too many colleges in Texas.
Yeah, that being said, I don't think any of us still know what A&M stands for, so...
Ohio State?
Might as well have.
Texas A&M.
The only person to get that right.
What is the team that won NBA championships in between the two Bulls three-peats?
I don't know. I was like four.
Detroit Pistons?
That's a good guess.
Houston Rockets.
That's correct.
This man loves NBA right here.
I grew my NBA.
What movie told the real-life story of Jordan Belfort?
That would be The Wolf of Wall Street.
Correct.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Correct.
Jordan Belfort. Wolf of Wall Street.
Correct.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Correct.
Space Jam.
Space Jam it is.
What was the name of the bear in The Jungle Book?
No idea.
No idea.
Oh, fuck me. Don't remember.
Is his name Fuck Me? Was that the name of the bear?
Not exactly kid appropriate. Isn't
it? Wasn't that an Austin Powers character?
Yeah.
Baloo.
All right.
Boom.
What actor from the Rocky franchise was also in Masters of the Universe?
That'd be Dolph Lundgren.
Bingo.
Oh, never seen Masters of the Universe, so
you have good taste.
Yeah,
that movie, but you have good taste.
Elliot, you shut your whore mouth.
Well, it's not Mr. T. I don't think it's that.
You know what? Mr. T is a hell of a guess, and I do want to live in the universe where Mr. T is the master.
Dolph Lundgren.
Hell yes!
Wow.
And then finally, in Rookie of the Year, what team does Henry Rowan Gardner play for?
The Yankees?
Let's go with the Oakland A's. The Cubs? I don't know.
That's correct.
That's a good guess, yeah.
What?
That's correct, yeah. So it's official, guys. Our winner is Andrew Catrone. Congratulations to you, sir.
He's also in that Catrone.
So congratulations, Andrew. You have bested all opponents, and you stand atop the Final Fantasy Thunderdome of Inside the Lockers Fantasy Football.
The Megatron, if you will.
The Megatron. And thank you, everybody, for playing. We really had a good time. We're going to do it again next year for sure. We really hope you'll come back and participate, and hopefully, you know, this next year, I'm just going to not care or try. I'm just going to do everything at random, and I think I'll probably do a little bit better.
Honestly, like,
you can move to Belgium and not watch football.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
That might be, like, it's a very zen approach to things.
Yeah, I'll just be the dude of fantasy football. I think that's exactly what I need to do. Well, thanks, guys, for listening. I want to remind you yet again, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also like the show you can follow the show on Twitter, at ITLcast, and you can like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. You can also follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at BryGuySalisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At JCDillion1.
At @the_beef.
And, of course, do consider becoming a subscriber. We really would appreciate that. But I guess it's going to do it. So I'm going to end the show the way I always do, paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon. When it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us.